Who? Just hurry. Kitty and I are waiting on the front steps, sharing the greenish banana. We both prefer an unripe greenish banana to a brown speckled one. It's Margot who likes the speckled ones. I'll try to save them for banana bread, but Margot gobbles them up, mushy, bruised parts and all. I shudder even to think of it. There's a chill in the air, even though it's still September and therefore practically still summer. Kitty rubs her legs to keep warm. She says she'll wear shorts all the way to October. That's her plan. It's past 7:30 now and no Peter yet. I'm starting to get nervous, but I don't want Kitty to worry. I decide that if he's not here in exactly 2 minutes, I'll go next door to Josh's and ask him to run Kitty over to school. Across the street, our neighbor, Ms. Rothschild, waves at us as she locks her front door, a big coffee thermos in her hand. She dashes toward her car. "Good morning, Ms. Rothschild," we chorus. I elbow Kitty and say, 5, 4, 3, damn it," Ms. Rothschild shrieks. Ms. Rothschild has spilled coffee on her hand. She does this at least twice a week. I don't know why she doesn't just slow down, or maybe just put the top on the thermos or not fill it up so high. Just then, Peter drives up, and his black Audi is even shinier in the daylight. I get up and say, "Come on, Kitty," and she trails behind me. "Who's that?" I hear her whisper. His windows are down. I come up close to the passenger side and stick my head in. "Is it okay if we drop my little sister off at the elementary school?" I ask. "She has to be there early today for a field trip." Peter looks annoyed. "Why didn't you mention it yesterday?" "I didn't know about it yesterday." Behind me, I can feel rather than hear Kitty fidgeting. "This is a two-seater," Peter says, as if I can't see with my own two eyes. "I know that. I'll just put Kitty in my lap and the seatbelt over us," which my dad would kill me for if he knew, but I'm not telling and neither will Kitty.
"Yeah, 'cause that sounds really safe."
He's being sarcastic. I hate when people are sarcastic. It's so cheap. "It's 2 miles. He sighs.
"Fine, get in."
I open the door and slide in, laying my bag at my feet. "Come on, Kitty." I make space for her between my legs and she climbs in. I strap us in tight, my arms around her. "Don't tell Daddy," I say. "Duh," she says.
"Hey, what's your name?"
Peter asks her. Kitty hesitates. More and more this happens. With new people, she has to decide if she'll be Kitty or Catherine. "Catherine."
"But everyone calls you Kitty?"
"Everyone who knows me," Kitty says. "You can call me Catherine." Peter's eyes light up.
"You're tough,"
he says admiringly, which Kitty ignores, but she keeps sneaking peeks at him. He has that effect on people, on girls, women even. We drive through the neighborhood in silence. At last, Kitty says, "So, who are you?" I look over at him and he's looking straight ahead.
"I'm Peter, your sister's boyfriend."
My mouth drops. We never said anything about lying to our families. I thought this was going to be an at-school-only thing. Kitty goes completely still in my arms. Then she twists around to look at me and shrieks, "He's your boyfriend? Since when?" "Since last week." At least that much is the truth. Sort of. "But you never said anything. Not one frigging word, Lara Jean." Automatically, I say, "Don't say frig." "Not one frigging word," Kitty repeats with a shake of her head. Peter cracks up and I give him a dirty look.
"It all happened really fast," he offers. "There was barely time to tell anybody."
"Was I talking to you?" Kitty snaps. "No, I don't think so. I was talking to my sister." Peter's eyes widen and I can see him trying to keep a straight face. "Does Margot know?" she asks me. "Not yet, and don't you go mentioning it to her before I have a chance to." This seems to appease Kitty a tiny bit. Knowing something first, before Margot, is a big deal. Then we're at the elementary school, and thank God the bus is still there in the parking lot. All the kids are lined up in front of it. I let out the breath I've been holding the whole way over, and Kitty is already untangling herself from me and bounding out of the car. "Have a good time on the field trip," I call out. She spins back around and points an accusing finger at me.
I want to hear the whole story when I get home. With that decree, she's off running for the bus loop. I rebuckle my seatbelt. I don't remember us deciding to tell our families that we're boyfriend-girlfriend. She was going to have to find out at some point, with me chauffeuring you and her around town. You didn't have to say boyfriend. You could have just said friend. We're getting close to school now. Just two more lights. I give my side braid a nervous tug. So have you talked to Genevieve at all? Peter frowns.
No.
She hasn't said a word to you about it?
Nope. But I'm sure she will soon.
Peter speeds into the parking lot and zooms into a space. When we get out of the car and head for the entrance, Peter's fingers lace through mine. I think he's going to drop me off at my locker like he did before, but he leads us in the opposite direction. Where are we going? I ask him.
Cafeteria.
I'm about to protest, but before I can, he says firmly,
We need to start hanging out in public more. The caf is where we'll get the most bang for our buck.
Josh won't be in the cafeteria. That's for popular people. But I know who will most certainly be there. Genevieve. When we walk in, she's holding court at their lunch table. Her and Emily Nussbaum and Gabe and Darrell from the lacrosse team. They're all eating breakfast and drinking coffee. She must have a sixth sense where Peter is concerned, because she beams lasers at us immediately. I start slowing down, which Peter doesn't seem to notice. Peter makes a beeline for the table, but at the last second, I chicken out. I tug on his hand and say, Let's sit over here, and point to an empty table in their line of vision.
Why?
Just please? I think fast. Because, you see, it would be too blatantly jerky of you to bring a girl to the table after you've only been broken up for, like, a minute. And this way, Genevieve can watch from afar and wonder for just a little bit longer. And also, I'm terrified. As I drag Peter over to the table, he waves to his friends, shrugging his shoulders like,
What are you gonna do?
I sit down and Peter sits down next to me. He pulls my chair closer to his. Raising his eyebrows, he asks,
Are you that afraid of her?
No.
Yes.
You're going to have to face her sometime. Peter leans forward and grabs my hand again and starts tracing the lines of my palm. Quit. I say, you're creeping me out. He flashes me a hurt look.
Girls love it when I do that.
No, Genevieve loves it. Or she pretends to love it. You know, now that I think of it, you actually don't have that much experience when it comes to girls. Just one girl. I take my hand away from his and perch it on the table. I mean, everybody thinks you're this big ladies' man, when in reality you've only been with Genevieve. And then Jamila for like a month.
Okay, okay, I get it. Enough already. They're watching us.
Who is? Your table? Peter shrugs.
Everyone.
I do a quick look around. He's right. Everyone is watching us. Peter's so used to people watching him, but I'm not. It feels funny, like a new sweater that makes my skin feel itchy. Because no one ever watches me. It's like being on stage. And the funny thing, the really strange thing is, it's not an altogether unpleasant feeling. I'm pondering this when my eyes meet Genevieve's. There's this very brief moment of recognition between us, like, I know you. Then she looks away and whispers something to Emily. Genevieve is looking at me like I am a tasty morsel, and she's going to eat me alive and then spit out my bones. And then, just as quickly, the look is gone and she's smiling. I shiver. The truth is, Genevieve scared me even when we were kids. One time I was playing at her house, and Margot called looking for me to come home for lunch, and Genevieve told her I wasn't there. She wouldn't let me leave because she wanted to keep playing dollhouse. She kept blocking the door. I had to call for her mom. The clock reads 8:05. The bell's going to ring soon. We should get going, I say, and when I stand up, my knees feel shaky. Ready? He's distracted because he was looking over at his table of friends.
Yeah, sure.
Peter gets up and propels me toward the door. He keeps one hand on the small of my back. With his other hand, he waves at his friends.
Smile,
he whispers to me. So I do. I have to admit, it's not a bad feeling,
having a boy sweep you along, usher you through crowds. It's the feeling of being cared for. It's kind of like walking in a dream. I'm still me, and Peter's still Peter, but everything around me feels fuzzy and unreal, like the time Margot and I snuck champagne on New Year's Eve. I never knew it before, but I think maybe all this time I've been invisible, just someone who was there. Now that people think I'm Peter Kavinsky's girlfriend, they're wondering about me. Like, why? What about me made Peter like me? What do I have? What makes me so special? I would be wondering, too. I am now a mysterious girl. Before, I was just a quiet girl. But becoming Peter's girlfriend has elevated me to mysterious girl. I take the bus home from school because Peter has to go to lacrosse practice. I sit in the front the way I've been doing, but today people have questions for me, underclassmen mostly, because hardly any upperclassmen take the bus. "What's with you and Kavinsky?" a sophomore girl named Manda asks me. I pretend like I don't hear her. Instead, I sink lower into my seat and open up the note Peter left for me in my locker. "Dear Lara Jean, good job today. Peter." I start to smile, and then I hear Manda whisper to her friend. "It's so weird that Kavinsky would like her. I mean, look at her, and then look at Genevieve." I can feel myself shrink. Is that what everyone thinks? Maybe it's not that I'm a mysterious girl. Maybe it's that I'm a not good enough girl. When I get home, I go straight to my room, put on a soft nightgown, and release my braid. It's sweet relief to let it out. My scalp is tingling with gratitude. Then I lie in my bed and stare out the window until it gets dark. My phone keeps buzzing, and I'm sure it's Chris, but I don't lift my head to look. Kitty barges in at one point and says, "Are you sick? Why are you still lying in bed like you have cancer like Brielle's mom did?" "I need peace," I say, closing my eyes. "I need to replenish myself with peace."
"Well, then what are we eating for dinner?"
I open my eyes. "That's right, it's a Monday. I'm in charge of dinner on Mondays now." "Ugh, Margot, where are you?" "It's dark already. There's not enough time to defrost anything. Maybe Mondays should be pizza nights." I eye her.
"Do you have any money?"
We both get an allowance. Kitty gets $5 a week and I get 20. But Kitty always has more money than me. She saves everything like a wily squirrel. I don't know where she keeps it because she locks the door whenever she goes to take any out of her stash. And she'll lend it, but she charges interest. Margot has a credit card that she's allowed to use for groceries and gas, but she took that with her. I should probably ask Daddy about getting me one, too, now that I'm the oldest sister.
"Why do you need money?"
"Because I want to order a pizza for dinner." Kitty opens her mouth to negotiate, but before she can get a word in, I say, "Daddy will pay you back when he gets home, so don't even think about charging me interest. The pizza's for you, too, you know. A 20 ought to do it." Kitty crosses her arms.
"I'll give you the money, but first you have to tell me about that boy from this morning. Your boyfriend."
I groan. "What do you want to know?"
"I want to know how you got together."
"We used to be friends back in middle school, remember? We'd all hang out in the Pierce's treehouse sometimes." Kitty gives me a blank shrug.
"Well, remember that day I got in a car accident?"
Kitty nods. "Well, Peter was driving by and he stopped and helped me. And we just reconnected. It was fate." Actually, this is good practice, telling Kitty this story. I'll tell Chris the same story tonight.
"That's it? That's the whole story?"
"Hey, that's a pretty good story," I say. "I mean, a car accident is very dramatic, plus our history together." Kitty just says,
"Hmm,"
and she leaves it at that. We have sausage and mushroom pizza for dinner, and when I broach the idea of pizza Mondays, Daddy is quick to agree. I think he's remembering my Bosom mac and cheese. It's a relief that Kitty spends most of dinner talking about her field trip, and all I have to do is chew on my pizza. I'm still thinking about what Manda said, and wondering if maybe this wasn't such a good idea after all. When Kitty pauses to inhale her slice, Daddy turns to me and says,
"Did anything interesting happen to you today?"
I swallow my mouthful of pizza.
Not really.
Later that night, I fix myself a bubble bath and soak in the tub for so long, Kitty bangs on the door twice to check if I've fallen asleep. Once, I almost do. I've just drifted off when my phone buzzes. It's Chris. I hit ignore, but then it keeps buzzing and buzzing and buzzing. I finally just pick up.
Is it true?
She screams. I hold the phone away from my ear. Yes.
Oh, my God. Tell me everything.
Tomorrow, Chris. I'll tell you everything tomorrow. Good night.
Wait.
Night. Chapter 29. That Friday, I go to my first ever football game. I've never had even the tiniest bit of interest in it before, and I still don't. I'm sitting high in the stands with Peter and his friends, and as far as I can tell, there's not a lot to see. It just seems like a lot of waiting and huddling and not a lot of action. Nothing at all like football games in the movies or on TV shows. By 9:30, the game's almost over, I hope, and I'm yawning into my coat when Peter suddenly throws his arm around me. I nearly choke on my yawn. Down below, Genevieve is cheering with the rest of the squad. She is shimmying and shaking her pom-poms. She looks up in the stands, and when she sees us, she stops for just a half second before launching into a new cheer, eyes blazing. I glance at Peter, who has a satisfied smirk on. When Genevieve's back on the sidelines, he drops his arm and suddenly seems to remember I'm there. He says,
"Eli's having people over tonight. Want to go?"
I don't even know who Eli is. I yawn again, a big one for show. I'm really tired, so no thank you. Can you just drop me off on the way there? Peter gives me a look, but he doesn't argue. On the way home, we pass by the diner, and Peter suddenly says,
"I'm hungry. Do you want to stop and get something?"
Pointedly, he adds,
"Or are you too tired?"
I ignore the dig and say, "Sure, I can eat." So Peter turns the car around and we go to the diner. We get a booth up front. Whenever I used to come here with Margo and Josh, we would always sit in the back near the jukebox so we could put coins in. Half the time the jukebox was broken, but we still like sitting near it. It's weird to be here without them. We have so many traditions here. The three of us would get 2 grilled cheese sandwiches and cut them up into squares, and we'd order a bowl of tomato soup to dip the squares in, and then Josh and I would share a waffle with extra whipped cream for dessert, and Margo would have a bowl of tapioca pudding. Gross, I know. I'm pretty sure only grandmas like tapioca pudding. Our waitress is Kelly, who's a student at the college. She was gone all summer, and I guess now she's back. She eyes Peter as she sets down our waters. "Where are your friends tonight?" she asks me. I say, "Margo's left for Scotland and Josh isn't here," which Peter rolls his eyes at. Then Peter orders blueberry pancakes and bacon and scrambled eggs. I get a grilled cheese with fries on the side and a black cherry soda. When Kelly leaves to put in our orders, I ask him, "Why do you hate Josh so much?"
"I don't hate him," Peter scoffs. "I barely know the guy."
"Well, you certainly don't like him." Peter scowls at me.
"What's to like? That kid turned me in once for cheating in 7th grade."
Peter cheated? My stomach twists a little.
"What kind of cheating was it? Like homework?" "No, a Spanish test. I wrote down the answers in my calculator and Josh freaking told on me. Who does that?"
I search his face for some sign of embarrassment or shame at having cheated, but I don't see even an iota.
"What are you so high and mighty for? You're the one who cheated."
"It was 7th grade."
"Well, do you still cheat?"
"No, hardly ever. I mean, I have." He frowns at me.
"Would you quit looking at me like that?"
"Like what?"
"With judgy eyes. Look, I'm going to school on a lacrosse scholarship anyway, so what does it matter?"
I have a sudden revelation. I lower my voice and say,
"Wait, can you read?"
He bursts out laughing.
"Yes, I can read. Jeez, Lara Jean, not everything has a story behind it, okay? I'm just lazy."
He snorts.
"Can I read? I've written you multiple notes. You're hilarious." I can feel my face get flushed. It wasn't that funny. I squint at him. Is everything a joke to you?
Not everything, but most things, sure.
I drop my chin. Then maybe that's a character flaw that you should work on, I say. Because some things are serious and they should be taken seriously. Sorry if you think that's me being judgy.
Yep, I think that's judgy. I think you're judgy in general. That's a character flaw that you should work on. I also think you need to learn how to kick back and have fun.
I'm listing off all the ways I have fun. Biking, which I hate, baking, reading. I consider saying knitting, but I'm pretty sure he'll only make fun of me. When Kelly drops off our food and I stop so I can bite into my grilled cheese while it's still oozy. Peter steals one of my French fries.
So, who else?
Who else what? With his mouth full, he says,
who else got letters?
That's really private. I shake my head at him like, wow, how rude.
What? I'm just curious.
Peter dips another fry into my little ramekin of ketchup. Smirking, he says,
come on, don't be shy. You can tell me. I know I'm number one, obviously, but I want to hear who else made the cut.
He's practically flexing. He's so sure of himself. Fine. If he wants to know so bad, I'll tell him. Josh, you.
Obviously.
Kenny. Peter snorts.
Kenny? Who's he?
I prop my elbows up on the table and rest my chin on my hands. A boy I met at church camp. He was the best swimmer of the whole boys' side. He saved a drowning kid once. He swam out to the middle of the lake before the lifeguards even noticed anything was wrong.
So, what do you say when he got the letter?
Nothing. It was sent back, returned to sender.
Okay, who's next?
I take a bite of sandwich. Lucas Kraff.
He's gay,
Peter says.
He's not gay. Dude, quit dreaming. The kid is gay. He wore an ascot to school yesterday.
I'm sure he was wearing it ironically. Besides, wearing an ascot doesn't make someone gay. I give him a look like, wow, so homophobic.
Hey, don't give me that look, he objects. My favorite uncle's gay as hell. I bet you $50 that if I showed my Uncle Eddie a picture of Lucas, he'd confirm it in half a second.
Just because Lucas appreciates fashion, that doesn't make him gay. Peter opens his mouth to argue, but I lift up a hand to quiet him. All it means is that he's more of a city guy in the midst of all this boring suburbia. I bet you he ends up going to NYU or some other place in New York. He could be a TV actor. He's got that look, you know, svelte with fine bone features, very sensitive features. He looks like an angel.
So, what did Angel Boy say about the letter then?
Nothing. I'm sure because he's a gentleman and didn't want to embarrass me by bringing it up. I give him a meaningful look. Unlike some people, is what I'm saying with my eyes. Peter rolls his eyes.
All right, whatever, I don't care.
He leans back in his seat and stretches his arm out on the back of the empty seat next to him.
That's only four. Who's the fifth?
I'm surprised he's been keeping count. John Ambrose McLaren. Peter's eyes widen.
McLaren? When did you like him?
Eighth grade.
I thought you liked me in eighth grade.
There may have been a little bit of overlap, I admit. Stirring my straw, I say, there was this one time in gym. He and I had to pick up all the soccer balls, and it started to rain. I sigh. It was probably the most romantic thing that ever happened to me.
What is it with girls and rain? Peter wonders.
I don't know. I guess maybe because everything feels more dramatic in the rain, I say with a shrug.
Did anything actually happen with you two, or were you just standing out in the rain picking up soccer balls?
You wouldn't understand. Someone like Peter could never understand. Peter rolls his eyes.
So, did McLaren's letter get sent to his old house?
He prompts. I think so. I never heard anything back from him. I take a long sip of my soda. Why do you sound so sad about it?
I'm not.
Maybe I am, a little.
Besides Josh, I think John Ambrose McLaren matters the most to me of all the boys I've loved. There was just something so sweet about him. It was the promise of maybe one day. I think John Ambrose McLaren must be the one that got away. Out loud, I say. I mean, either he never got my letter or he did, and I shrug. I just always wondered how he turned out. If he's still the same. I bet he is.
You know what? I think maybe he mentioned you once.
Slowly, he says.
Yeah, he definitely did. He said he thought you were the prettiest girl in our grade. He said his one regret from middle school was not asking you to the 8th grade formal.
My whole body goes still, and I think I even stop breathing.
For real?
I whisper.
Peter busts up laughing. Dude, you're so gullible!
My stomach squeezes. Blinking, I say, that was really mean. Why would you say that? Peter stops laughing and says,
hey, I'm sorry, I was just kidding.
I reach across the table and punch him in the shoulder, hard.
You're a jerk.
He rubs his shoulder and cries out,
ow, that hurt.
Well, you deserved it.
Sorry,
he says again. But there's still a trace of laughter in his eyes, so I turn my head away from him.
Hey, come on, don't be mad. Who knows, maybe he did like you. Let's call him and find out.
My head snaps up. You have his phone number? You have John Ambrose McLaren's number? Peter pulls out his cell phone.
Sure, let's call him right now.
No! I try to grab his phone away from him, but he's too quick. He holds his phone above my head and I can't reach.
Don't you dare call him! Why not? I thought you were so curious about whatever happened to him.
I shake my head fervently.
What are you so afraid of? That he doesn't remember you?
Something changes in his face, some dawning realization about me.
Or that he does.
I shake my head.
That's it.
Peter nods to himself. He tips back in his chair, his hands linked around his head. I don't like the way he's looking at me. Like he thinks he's figured me out. I hold my palm out to him.
Give me your phone.
Peter's jaw drops.
You're going to call him? Right now?
I like that I've surprised him. It makes me feel like I've won something back. I think throwing Peter off guard could be a fun hobby for me. In a commanding voice I've only ever used with Kitty, I say, just give me your phone. Peter hands me his phone, and I copy John's number into mine. I'll call him when I feel like it, not because you feel like it. Peter gives me a look of grudging respect. Of course, I'm never going to call John, but Peter K. doesn't need to know that. That night, I'm lying in bed still thinking about John. It's fun to think of the what if. Scary, but fun. It's like, I thought this door was closed before, but here it is open, just the tiniest crack. What if? What would that be like? Me and John Ambrose McLaren. If I close my eyes, I can almost picture it. Chapter 30. Margot and I are on the phone. It's Saturday afternoon here and Saturday night there. Have you lined up an internship for the spring?
Not yet.
Margot lets out a sigh. I thought you were going to try and do something at Montpelier. I know they need help in the archives. Do you want me to call Donna for you? Margot did an internship at Montpelier for 2 summers, and she loved it. She was there for some important dig where they found a shard of Dolly Madison's china plate, and you'd have thought they found diamonds or a dinosaur bone. Everybody loves Margot over there. When she left, they gave her a plaque for all her hard work. Daddy hung it up in the living room. Montpelier's too far of a drive, I say. What about volunteering at the hospital? She suggests. You could get a ride with Daddy on the days you have to go in. You know I don't like the hospital.
Then the library. You like the library.
I've already filled out an application.
I lie.
Have you really?
Or, I was just about to.
I shouldn't have to push you to want things. You should want them for yourself. You need to take the initiative. I'm not always going to be beside you to push you.
I know that.
I mean, do you realize how important this year is, Lara Jean? It's kind of everything. You don't get a do-over. This is junior year.
I can feel tears and panic building up inside me. If she asks me another question, it will be too much and I'll cry.
Hello?
I'm still here. My voice comes out tiny, and I know Margot knows how close I am to crying. She pauses. Look, you still have time, okay? I just don't want you to wait too long and have all the good placements go to other people. I'm just worried about you is all. But everything's fine, you're still okay.
Okay.
Even just that one little word is an effort.
How's everything else?
I started out this conversation wishing I could tell her about Peter and everything that's been going on with me. But now I'm just feeling relieved that there are all these miles between us and she can't see what I'm up to.
Everything's good, I say.
How's Josh? Have you talked to him lately?
Not really, I say, which I haven't. I've been so busy with Peter, I haven't really had a chance.
Chapter 31. Kitty and I are on the front steps. She's drinking her Korean yogurt drink, and I'm working on that scarf for Margot while I wait for Peter. Kitty's waiting for Daddy to come out. He's dropping her off at school today. Ms. Rothschild hasn't come outside yet. Maybe she's sick today, or maybe she's running even later than usual. We've got our eyes locked on her front door when a minivan drives down our street and slows in front of our house. I squint my eyes. It's Peter Kavinsky, driving a tan minivan. He ducks his head out the window.
Are you coming or not?
Why are you driving that? Kitty calls out.
Never mind that, Catherine, Peter calls back. Just get in.
Kitty and I look at each other. Me too? Kitty asks me. I shrug. Then I lean back and open the front door and yell out,
Kitty's getting a ride with me, Daddy.
Okay,
he yells back. We stand up, but just then Ms. Rothschild comes dashing out of the house in her navy blue suit, briefcase in one hand, coffee in the other. Kitty and I look at each other gleefully. 5, 4, 3, damn it!
Giggling, we hurl ourselves toward Peter's minivan. I hop into the passenger seat and Kitty climbs into the back.
What are you guys laughing about? He asks.
I'm about to tell him when Josh walks out of his house. He stops and stares at us for a second before he waves. I wave back and Kitty hangs her head out the window and yells, Hi, Josh!
What up?
Peter calls out, leaning over me.
Hey,
Josh says back. Then he gets in his car. Peter pokes me in the side and grins and puts the car in reverse.
Tell me why you guys were laughing.
Clicking into my seatbelt, I say, At least once a week, Ms. Rothschild runs out to her car and spills hot coffee all over herself. Kitty pipes up.
It's the funniest thing in the world.
Peter snorts.
You guys are sadistic.
What's sadistic?
Kitty wants to know. She puts her head between us. I push her back and say, Put your seatbelt on. Peter puts the car in reverse.
It means seeing other people in pain makes you happy.
Oh.
She repeats it to herself softly. Sadistic. Don't teach her weird stuff, I say.
I like weird stuff, Kitty protests.
Peter says,
See, the kid likes weird stuff.
Without turning around, he lifts his hand up for a high five, and Kitty leans forward and slaps it heartily.
Hey, give me a sip of whatever it is you're drinking back there.
It's almost gone, so you can have the rest, she says.
Kitty hands it over, and Peter tips back the plastic container in his mouth.
This is good,
he says.
It's from the Korean grocery store, Kitty tells him. They come in a pack, and you can put them in the freezer, and if you pack it for lunch, it'll be icy and cold when you drink it.
Sounds good to me.
Lara Jean, bring me one of these tomorrow morning, will you? For services rendered.
I shoot him a dirty look, and Peter says, I mean the rides, jeez. I'll bring you one, Peter, Kitty says.
That's my girl.
As long as you give me a ride to school tomorrow, too.
Kitty finishes, and Peter hoots.
Chapter 32. Before fourth period, I'm at my locker trying to repin my milkmaid braid in the little mirror hanging from the door.
Lara Jean?
Yes?
I peek around the door, and it's Lucas Kraft, wearing a thin V-neck sweater in brilliant blue and stone-colored khakis.
I've had this for a while now. I wasn't going to say anything, but then I thought maybe you'd want it back.
He puts a pink envelope in my hand. It's my letter. So Lucas got his, too. I drop it into my locker, making a yikes face at myself in the mirror, and then close the door.
So you're probably wondering what this is all about, I begin, and then I immediately falter. It's, well, I wrote it a long time ago, and
you don't have to explain.
Really? You're not curious?
No.
It was just really nice to get a letter like that. I was actually pretty honored.
I let out a relieved sigh and sag against my locker. Why is Lucas Kraft just so exactly right? He knows how to say the perfect thing. And then Lucas gives me a half-grimace, half-smile.
But the thing is, he lowers his voice, you know I'm gay, right?
Oh, right, totally, I say, trying not to sound disappointed. No, I totally knew.
So Peter was right after all.
Lucas smiles.
You're so cute, he says, and I perk up again. Then he says, listen, can you not tell anybody, though? I mean, I'm out, but I'm not out yet. You know what I mean?
Totally, I say, super confident.
For instance, my mom knows, but my dad only kind of knows. I haven't outright told him.
Got it. I just let people believe what they please. I don't feel like it's my responsibility to quantify myself for them. I mean, you get what I'm talking about. As a biracial person, I'm sure people are always asking you what race you are, right?
I haven't thought of it that way before, but yes, yes, yes.
Lucas just gets it.
Exactly. It's like, why do you need to know?
Exactly.
We smile at each other, and I feel that wonderful sensation of being known by someone. We walk together in the same direction. He has Mandarin class, and I have French. At one point, he asks me about Peter, and I'm tempted to tell him the truth because I'm feeling so close to him. But Peter and I made that pact. We explicitly said we would never tell anyone. I don't want to be the one to break it. So when Lucas says, hey, so what's the deal with you and Kavinsky? I just shrug and give him an enigmatic smile.
It's crazy, right? Because he's so...
I search for the exact right word, but I can't think of it. I mean, he could play the part of a handsome guy in a movie. Hastily, I add, so could you, though. You'd play the guy the girl should pick.
Lucas laughs, but I can tell he likes it.
Dear Lucas, I never met a boy with manners as good as yours. You ought to have a British accent. At homecoming, you wore a cravat, and it suited you so well, I think you could wear one all the time and get away with it.
Oh, Lucas, I wish I knew what kind of girls you liked. As far as I can tell, you haven't dated anyone, unless you have a girlfriend at another school. You're just so mysterious. I hardly know a thing about you. The things I know are so unsubstantial, so unsatisfying, like that you eat a chicken sandwich every day at lunch, and you're on the golf team. I guess the one remotely real thing I know about you is you're a good writer, which must mean you have deep reserves of emotion. Like that short story you wrote in Creative Writing about the poisoned well, and it was from a 6-year-old boy's perspective. It was so sensitive, so keen. That story made me feel like I knew you at least a little bit, but I don't know you, and I wish I did. I think you're very special. I think you are probably one of the most special people at our school, and I wish more people knew that about you.
Or maybe I don't, because sometimes it's nice to be the only one who knows something. Love, Lara Jean. Chapter 33. After school, Chris and I are hanging out in my room. She's in trouble with her mom for staying out all night, so she's hiding out over here until her mom leaves for book club. We're sharing a big bag of Kitty's pirate booty, which I'm going to have to replace because she'll complain if it's missing from her lunch on Monday. Chris stuffs a handful of pirate booty puffs in her mouth.
Just tell me, Lara Jean, how far have you guys gone?
I almost choke.
We've gone nowhere, and we have no plans to go anywhere in the near future.
Or ever.
Seriously? Not even over the bra action? A quick swipe across your chest.
No. I told you, me and my sister aren't like that.
Chris snorts. Are you joking me? Of course Margot and Josh have had sex. Quit being so naive, Lara Jean.
This isn't me being naive, I tell her. I know for a fact that he and Margot haven't done it.
How? How do you know for a fact? I'd love to hear this.
I'm not telling you. If I tell Chris, she'll only laugh more. She doesn't understand. She only has a little brother. She doesn't know how it is with sisters. Margot and I, we made a pact back in middle school. We swore we wouldn't have sex until we were married or we were really, really in love and at least 21. Margot might be really, really in love, but she's not married and she's not 21. She'd never go back on her word. With sisters, a pact is everything.
No, I'd really love to know.
Chris has that hungry glint in her eyes, and I know she's just getting warmed up.
You just want to make fun of it, and I'm not going to let you, I say.
Chris rolls her eyes.
Fine, but there's no way they haven't boned.
I think Chris talks like that on purpose to get a reaction from me. She loves a reaction, so I'm careful not to give her one. I calmly say, can you please stop talking about my sister and Josh having sex? You know I don't like it.
Chris takes a permanent marker out of her bag and starts to color in her thumbnail. You need to stop being such a scaredy cat. Seriously, you've built it up in your head to be this huge, life-changing moment, but it's actually done in under 5 and it's not even the best part.
I know she's waiting for me to ask what the best part is, and I am curious, but I ignore her and say, I think permanent marker is toxic for your nails. To which she shakes her head at me like I'm a lost cause. I wonder, though, what would it be like to be that close to a boy and have him see all of you, no holding back? Would it be scary only for a second or two, or would it be scary the whole time? What if I didn't like it at all? Or what if I liked it too much? It's a lot to think about. Chapter 34. Do you think if a guy and a girl have been dating for a long time, they've automatically had sex? I ask Peter. We're sitting on the floor of the library, our backs against the wall of the reference section nobody ever goes to. It's after school, the library's empty, and we're doing homework. Peter gets C's and D's in chemistry, so I've been helping him study. Peter looks up from his chem book, suddenly interested. He tosses the book aside and says, I need more information. How long have they been dating?
A long time, like 2 years, something like that.
How old are they? Our age?
About.
Then most likely, but not necessarily. It depends on the guy and the girl. But if I had to put money on it, yeah.
But the girl's not like that. The guy isn't either.
Who are we talking about here?
That's a secret. I hesitate and then say, Chris thinks there's no way they haven't. She says it's impossible.
Peter snorts. Why are you going to her for advice? That girl is a train wreck.
She is not a train wreck. He gives me a look.
Freshman year, she got wasted on Four Loko and she climbed up on Tyler Boylan's roof and did a strip tease.
Were you there? I demand. Did you see it with your own two eyes?
Damn straight. Fished her clothes out of the pool like the gentleman I am.
I blow out my cheeks.
Well, Chris never mentioned that story to me, so I can't really speak to that. Besides, didn't they ban Four Loko or whatever it's called?
They still make it, but it's a shitty watered-down version. You can dump 5-hour energy in it to get the same effect.
I shudder, which makes Peter smile.
What do you and Chris even talk about?
He asks. You have nothing in common.
What do we talk about? I counter.
Peter laughs.
Point taken.
He pushes away from the wall and puts his head in my lap, and I go completely still. I try to make my voice sound normal as I say, You're in a really strange mood today. He raises an eyebrow at me.
What kind of mood am I in?
Peter sure loves to hear about himself. Normally I don't mind, but today I'm not in the mood to oblige him. He already has too many people in his life telling him how great he is. The obnoxious kind, I say, and he laughs.
I'm sleepy.
He closes his eyes and snuggles against me.
Tell me a bedtime story, Covey.
Don't flirt, I tell him. His eyes fly open.
I wasn't.
Yes, you were. You flirt with everyone. It's like you can't help yourself.
Well, I don't ever flirt with you.
Peter sits back up and checks his phone, and suddenly I'm wishing I didn't say anything at all. Chapter 35. I'm in French class looking out the window, as I am wont to do, and that's when I see Josh walking toward the bleachers by the track. He's carrying his lunch, and he's alone. Why is he eating alone? He has his comic book group. He has Jersey Mike. But I guess he and Jersey Mike didn't hang out so much last year. Josh was always with Margot and me, the trio. And now we're not even a duo, and he's all alone. Part of it's Margot's fault for leaving, but I can see my part in it, too. If I'd never started liking him, I wouldn't have had to make up this whole Peter Kay story. I could just be his good friend, Lara Jean, like always. Maybe this is why Mommy told Margot not to go to college with a boyfriend. When you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, you only want to be with that person, and you forget about everybody else. And then, when the two of you break up, you've lost all your friends. They were off doing fun stuff without you. All I can say is, Josh sure is a lonely figure eating his sandwich on the very top bleacher. I take the bus home from school because Peter had to leave early for a lacrosse game with his club team. I'm in front of the house, taking the mail out of our mailbox, when Josh pulls into his driveway.
Hey!
He calls out. He climbs out of his car and jogs over to me, his backpack slung over his shoulder.
I saw you on the bus, he says. I waved, but you were doing your daydreaming thing. So, how long's your car going to be in the shop?
I don't know. It keeps changing. They had to order a part from, like, Indiana. Josh gives me a knowing look.
So you're secretly relieved, right?
No. Why would I be relieved?
Come on. I know you. You hate driving. You're probably glad to have the excuse not to drive.
I start to protest, but then I stop. There's no use. Josh knows me too well. Well, maybe I'm a teeny tiny bit relieved.
If you ever need a ride, you know you can call me.
I nod. I do know that. I wouldn't call him for myself, but I would for Kitty in an emergency.
I mean, I know you have Kavinsky now, but I'm right next door. It's way more convenient for me to give you a ride to school than him. I mean, it's more environmentally responsible.
I don't say anything, and Josh scratches the back of his neck.
I want to say something to you, but I feel weird bringing it up. Which is also weird because we've always been able to talk to each other.
We can still talk to each other, I say. Nothing's changed. That's the biggest lie I've ever told him. Even bigger than the lie about my so-called dead twin Marcella. Until a couple of years ago, Josh thought I had a twin sister named Marcella who died of leukemia.
Okay. I feel like you've been avoiding me ever since...
He's going to say it. He's actually going to say it. I look down at the ground.
Ever since Margot broke up with me.
My head snaps up. That's what he thinks? That I'm avoiding him because of Margot? Did my letter really make that little of an impact? I try to keep my face still and expressionless when I say, I haven't been avoiding you. I've just been busy. With Kavinsky, I know. You and I have known each other a long time. You're one of my best friends, Lara Jean. I don't want to lose you, too. It's the two that's the sticking point. The two is what stops me in my tracks. It sticks in my craw. Because if he hadn't said two, it would be about me and him. Not about me and him and Margot. That letter you wrote... Too late. I don't want to talk about the letter anymore. Before he can say another word, I say, I'll always be your friend, Joshy. And then I smile at him, and it takes a lot of effort. It takes so much effort, but if I don't smile, I'll cry. Josh nods.
Okay, good. So can we hang out again?
Sure.
Josh reaches out and chucks my chin. So can I give you a ride to school tomorrow?
Okay, I say, because wasn't that kind of the whole point of this? To be able to hang out with Josh again without that letter hanging over our heads? To just be his good friend, Lara Jean, again. After dinner, I teach Kitty how to do laundry. She resists me at first, but I tell her that this is a job we are all sharing from now on, so she'd better just accept it. When the buzzer goes off, that means it's done, and you have to fold it right away or it'll get wrinkled. To both of our surprise, Kitty likes doing laundry, mostly because she can sit in front of the TV and fold and watch her shows in peace. Next time, I'll teach you how to iron.
Ironing too? Who am I, Cinderella?
I ignore her. You'll be good at ironing. You like precision and clean lines. You'll probably be better at it than me. This piques her interest.
Yeah, maybe. Your stuff always looks wrinkled no matter what.
After we finish the laundry, Kitty and I are washing up in the bathroom we share. There are two sinks. Margot had the one on the left, and Kitty and I used to fight over who the sink on the right belonged to. It's hers now. Kitty's brushing her teeth, and I'm putting on a cucumber aloe face mask when Kitty says to me,
Do you think if I asked, Peter would take us to McDonald's tomorrow on the way to school?
I rub another dollop of green face mask onto my cheeks. I don't want you getting used to Peter giving us rides. You're taking the bus from now on, okay? Kitty pouts.
Why?
Because. Besides, Peter's not giving me a ride tomorrow. Josh is.
But won't Peter be mad?
My face is getting tight from the mask drying. Through clenched teeth, I say, Nah, he's not the jealous type.
Then who's the jealous type?
I don't have a good answer for that. Who is the jealous type? I'm mulling this over when Kitty giggles at me in the mirror and says,
You look like a zombie.
I hold my hands out to her face and she ducks away. In my best zombie voice I say,
I want to eat your brains.
Kitty runs away screaming. When I'm back in my room, I text Peter that I don't need a ride to school tomorrow. I don't tell him Josh is giving me a ride, just in case. Chapter 36. Today's note from Peter says, Tart and tangy after school? He's drawn two boxes, a yes or a no. I check yes and drop the note in his locker. After school ends, I meet Peter at his car, and we caravan with his lacrosse friends to Tart and Tangy. I order an original frozen yogurt with Captain Crunch and strawberries and kiwi and pineapple. And Peter gets key lime with crushed up Oreos. I pull out my wallet to pay for my yogurt, but Peter stops me. He winks at me and says, I got this. I whisper, I thought you weren't ever paying for anything. My boys are here. I can't look like a cheap ass in front of my boys. Then he puts his arm around me and says loudly,
For as long as you're my girl, you don't pay for frozen yogurt.
I roll my eyes, but I'm not going to say no to a free frozen yogurt. No boy has ever paid for me before. I could get used to this kind of nice treatment. I was bracing myself to see Genevieve here, but she doesn't show.
I think Peter's wondering too because he keeps his eyes on the door. With Genevieve, I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. So far, she's been eerily, disturbingly quiet. She's hardly ever in the cafeteria during lunch because she and Emily Nussbaum have been eating off campus, and when I see her in the hallways, she fake smiles at me without showing her teeth, which is somehow more menacing. When is she going to strike back against me? When will I have my Jameela Singh moment? Chris says Genevieve's too obsessed with her college boyfriend to care about me and Peter, but I don't believe it. I've seen the way she looks at him, like he's hers. The boys put a few tables together and we basically take over the place. It's just like at the lunch table, with them being loud talking about the football game coming up on Friday. I don't think I say two words. I don't really have anything to add. I just eat my free frozen yogurt and enjoy the fact that I'm not at home organizing my shoe closet or watching the golf channel with my dad. We're walking to our cars when Gabe says, "Hey, Lara Jean, did you know that if you say your name really fast, it sounds like large? Try it. Lara Jean." Dutifully, I repeat, "Lara Jean, Lara Jean, Largy." Actually, I think it sounds more like Largy, not large. Gabe nods to himself and announces, "I'm going to start calling you Large. You're so little, it's funny, right? Like those big guys who go by the name Tiny." I shrug. "Sure." Gabe turns to Darrell. "She's so little, she could be our mascot." "Hey, I'm not that small," I protest.
"How tall are you?"
Darrell asks me. 5'2", I fib. It's more like 5'1¼". Tossing his spoon in the trash, Gabe says, "You're so little, you could fit in my pocket." All the guys laugh, Peter smiling in a bemused way. Then Gabe suddenly grabs me and throws me over his shoulder, like I'm a kid and he's my dad. "Gabe, put me down!" I shriek, kicking my legs and pounding on his chest. He starts spinning around in a circle, and all the guys are cracking up. "I'm going to adopt you, Large. You're going to be my pet. I'll put you in my old hamster cage." I'm giggling so hard I can't catch my breath, and I'm starting to feel dizzy. "Put me down!"
"Put her down, man," Peter says, but he's laughing too.
Gabe runs toward somebody's pickup truck and sets me down in the back. "Get me out of here," I yell. Gabe's already running away. All the guys start getting into their cars.
"Bye, Large," they call out.
Peter jogs over to me and extends his hand so I can hop down.
"Your friends are crazy," I say, jumping onto the pavement.
"They like you," he says.
"Really?"
"Sure. They used to hate it when I would bring Jen places. They don't mind if you hang out with us." Peter slings his arm around me.
"Come on, Large. I'll take you home."
As we walk to his car, I let my hair fall in my face so he doesn't see me smiling. It sure is nice being part of a group, feeling like I belong. Chapter 37. I volunteered to bake 6 dozen cupcakes for Kitty's PTA bake sale. I did it because Margot's done it for the past 2 years. Margot only ever did it because she didn't want people to think Kitty's family wasn't involved enough in PTA. She did brownies both times, but I signed up for cupcakes because I thought they'd be a bigger hit. I bought a few different kinds of blue sprinkles, and I made little toothpick flags that say Blue Mountain Academy. I thought Kitty would have fun helping me decorate. But now I'm realizing Margot's way was better, because with brownies, you just pour them in the pan, bake, and slice, and there you go. Cupcakes are a lot more work. You have to scoop the perfect amount 6 dozen times, and then you have to wait for them to cool, and then you're frosting and sprinkling. I'm measuring out my 8th cup of flour when the doorbell rings.
"Kitty!"
I scream.
"Get the door!"
It rings again.
"Kitty!"
From upstairs, she screams back,
"I'm running an important experiment!"
I run to the door and fling it open without bothering to check who it is. Peter. He busts up laughing.
"You have flour all over your face," he says,
dusting off my cheeks with the back of his hands. I twist away from him and wipe my face with my apron. "What are you doing here?"
"We're going to the game. Didn't you read my note from yesterday?"
Oh, shoot, I had a test and I forgot.
Peter frowns and I add, I can't go anyway because I have to bake 72 cupcakes by tomorrow.
On a Friday night?
Well, yeah.
Is this for the PTA bake sale?